Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Hello, and thanks for joining me on this, the RTC Weekly Download, an hour of great old-time radio for you to enjoy. Today, one of the shows that's not that well-known, but it probably should be. It's called Good News of 1938. And this was a collaboration between Hollywood Movie Studios and Maxwell House Coffee to produce a program that was star-studded. And they kind of anticipated the big show that that NBC launched in the 50s to try to save drama radio when it was really too late, when television was already firmly taken over and was making big moves on radio. But this anticipates that. I mean, this is way back in 1938. So let's listen to an episode from February of 1938, and its guest star is Jack Benny.
For correct time all the time, wear a Bulova. Trade in your old watch. Get a liberal allowance on a new Bulova. Any Bulova you choose.
Maxwell House Coffee presents Good News of 1938. Welcome to another hour behind the scenes in Hollywood, brought to you from Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. Imagine yourself with us now on Soundstage 30, sitting with the famous stars who have come to broadcast and to listen to our program. Tonight you will hear Frank Morgan, Fanny Bryce, Alan Jones, Maureen O'Sullivan, director Jack Conway, and Meredith Wilson, and anybody else that might happen to drop in. And here's your host for the evening, Robert Taylor. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, Bob.
Well, Frank Morgan. What is it, Frank?
Bob, I just wanted you to know I'm here. I was a little late. I've been trying to hire an orchestra for the house party I'm giving Saturday night.
I'll bet that's going to be some party. Hiring an orchestra and everything, huh?
Oh, yeah. I always hire an orchestra. Why, at my last party, I had the Philadelphia Symphony. 110 men and a girl. And oh, what a girl. Wow. Redhead. Let's see. Her number is Philadelphia...
Philadelphia what?
Philadelphia, PA. I know my geography. Yes, sir. I get road maps from all the gas stations when I stop for free water. Yeah, but, Bob, I have you any idea where I can dig up a good orchestra? Money's no object.
What'll you pay them?
Well, I'll give them my personal check for $200 or $5 cash.
Well, say, Meredith Wilson might like to make $5. What do you think of him as a musician?
Well, it sounds like a good idea. Why doesn't he take it up? It's Oh, Meredith Wilson, yes. Well, confidentially, Bob, he can't read a note of music.
Well, that has nothing to do with it. I can't read music, and yet I play the cello fairly well. I play by ear.
By ear? Well, don't you find that rather awkward with a cello?
I don't think you know a thing about music.
Well, I do, too. You're just jealous, Bob.
All right. Now, let's say that Meredith Wilson's orchestra was to play an andante movement or an agitato movement or poco lento.
Yes.
What's the difference?
That's what I say. What's the difference? Who cares? Let them play anything. What's the score? Who's playing?
Oh, please, Meredith. Whistle while you work.
Thank you.
let it bother you. Forget your trouble, try to be just like a cheerful chickadee and whistle while you work. Come on, get smart, tune up and start to whistle while you work.
Whistle while you work.
Pull on that train and start riding to whistle while you work.
So hum a merry tune.
Just do your best and take the rest and sing yourself a song.
When there's too much to do, don't let it bother you. Forget your trouble, try to be just like the cheerful chickadee. And
whistle while you work. Come on, get smart, tune up, just start to whistle while you work.
Grand Meredith, and incidentally, the song is from one of the grandest pictures that ever came out of Hollywood, Walt Disney's magnificent Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. It's Walt's masterpiece, and just as fine for grown-ups as for children. And speaking of children brings me, of course, to that awful little girl who's become such a popular feature of our program. Here she is again with Hanley Stafford as her father, Baby Snooks.
Snooks, what are you doing up so early?
What time is it?
Why, it's not 8 yet.
Is it 7?
No, it's after 7.
Well, 8 comes after 7.
I know it does, but it's different with telling time.
Why?
Because it is. You have to figure with hours and minutes.
There?
On the clock. Here, look at it.
What's those black things?
Those are the hands. They point out the time.
Where are the fingers?
They don't have fingers.
I got fingers.
I know you have fingers, but those hands don't have any.
Well, how can they point?
Snooks, they just indicate the time. Now look, every time that big hand makes a complete revolution of the face...
Well, whose face?
This face on the clock.
That ain't a face.
I tell you, it is a face.
It ain't got a mouth.
Oh, of course not.
Has it got eyes?
No, and it hasn't got a nose, and it hasn't got ears either.
You call that a face?
Yes.
Do you feel all right, Daddy?
I feel fine. Will you stop interrupting me?
All right, Daddy.
Well, now look at the clock. The big hand is the minute hand, and the little hand shows the hours. Now, these numbers all around the face each denote a different hour. Are you following me?
Where are we going?
We're not going anywhere. I'm trying to teach you to tell the time. Now, do you see these numbers on the clock?
Uh-huh.
The number at the top is 12. When both hands point to 12, it's 12 o'clock. Understand?
Mm-hmm.
Good. Now, what is it when both hands point to 12?
I don't know.
It's 12 o'clock.
Is it?
Yes.
Oh. And I'm late for school.
Oh, it's not 12 o'clock now. You just pay attention to what I'm telling you.
All right, Daddy.
Now, each time the big hand moves to another number, that's 5 minutes. And every time the little hand moves, an hour goes.
Where does it go?
Snooks, that has nothing to do with telling the time. All you have to understand is the movements of the hands. Now, let's see if you remember what I just explained.
All right, Daddy.
Here now, look at this clock. Now, you see, the little hand is between the 7 and 8, and the big hand is on the 7.
Uh-huh.
All right. What does the clock say?
Tick-tock.
Oh, it says 20 minutes to 8. And good heavens, I've got to get dressed and get to the office. Look out, Snooks.
Are you going to shave, Daddy?
Yes, and don't trail after me.
I want to watch you.
Oh, all right, but don't pester me with questions.
Why?
Because I'll get nervous and cut myself with a razor. Now, just keep quiet now.
All right. Daddy!
Oh! Why do you yell like that? See, I've cut my face. Boy, look at that slice. It's a beauty.
You like it, Daddy?
No, I don't like it. And I want you to let me finish, so don't make another sound.
I won't.
Remember now, Snooks, this razor's very sharp.
Yes, Daddy.
Will you be quiet?
Uh-huh.
Good. Now, just stand there and watch.
All right. Daddy!
Oh! Snooks, you made me cut myself again. Now, just get right out of here.
I'll be quiet, Daddy.
Well, you'd better. This razor pulls.
What you doing now, Daddy?
I'm stropping the razor.
Why?
Because it's not sharp.
Yes, it is.
How do you know?
Because it sharpened my pencils all right.
What? Now listen, how many times have I told you not to take my razor from the box?
I didn't take it from the box. I found it in the kitchen.
In the kitchen? What was my razor doing in the kitchen?
Mama was cutting a linoleum with it.
Snooks, I don't believe you. Now you're going to get a spanking.
Why?
Didn't you promise never to touch my razor?
Mm-hmm.
And didn't I promise to give you a spanking the next time you did?
Mm-hmm.
Well?
Well, I didn't keep my promise, so you don't have to keep yours.
Oh, no. You're not getting away with it this time, young lady. Come over here.
There.
You simply must learn to behave.
There.
All right, that's all.
Ah!
Oh, stop it. I didn't hurt you. Now, come here and kiss Daddy and say you're sorry. There. That's better. Now, Snooks, I want you to tell me why I punished you.
Ah!
Now, what's the matter now?
That's just it.
Just what?
First you give me a licking, then you don't know why you did it.
Ted Pearson with some advice on coffee. You know, friends, there's more than fine, full-bodied flavor, more even than that deep-down satisfaction in a steaming, fragrant cup of Maxwell House coffee. Yes, grand as that is, there's something more. It's that friendly stimulation in a cup of Maxwell House coffee, the kind that buoys you up and never lets you down. Now, we've taken various ways of pointing out just what we mean by that friendly stimulation. But tonight, I have an idea we can express it in a different way. Anyway, I'm going to try. I'm going to call on our maestro here, our own Meredith Wilson, to help me out. Oh, Meredith, do you mind?
Why, not at all, Ted, if I can help.
Well, then, Meredith, how would you tell us about that friendly stimulation that's in a cup of Maxwell House?
Well, let's see. I think I'd set it to music, Ted. Let's say the boys and I have been rehearsing for maybe 5 hours, and we're pretty well worn out, all of us. And by that time, we're playing something like this. Then I know it's time for a little rest. And as we all file out, we're pretty apt to congregate in the coffee shop for a smoke and a cup of Maxwell House coffee. Well, 20 minutes later, we're back at our desks playing like this. Yes, Ted, once more we're playing Allegro Vivace, or in other words, con brio.
Or as one might further say, con Maxwell House. Well, I guess there are times when, to alter an old saying, music speaks louder than words, and this seems to be one of them. Well, thank you, Meredith. You certainly have expressed the friendly stimulation there is in a cup of Maxwell House coffee for all of us. And so, friends, when you're tired, maybe feeling out of sorts, a little low in spirits, and you need a really wholesome pickup, why then take time at your meals to enjoy a tempting, fragrant cup of the coffee that buoys you up and never lets you down.
Nice commercializing, Ted Pearson.
Thank you, Bob. Now I've relayed my message to our audience, I have a message for you. There's someone waiting to see you.
Well, tell him to come back later, will you? I'm very busy now.
Why?
Because. Oh, it's Jack Benny.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you. Yeah, I can't be that good. Hello again. This is Jack Snooks Benny talking. And, Bob, I just dropped in here for a minute to thank you again for appearing on my program last Sunday night. It was a lovely gesture on your part, and we appreciated it.
Well, that's okay, Jack. I enjoyed every minute of it. It was a lot of fun.
Yes, sir. We sure got a lot of laughs, didn't you? And the members of my cast got a big kick out of meeting you, Bob.
It was my pleasure, Jack. You know what impresses me about your program, Jack?
What, Bob?
Well, the way your cast looks up to you, the way they respect you.
Respect me? Oh, yes, yes. I've got them trained pretty well, Bob. You know, when I crack the whip, they jump.
They sure do.
Oh, yes. You know, when I want something done, I simply give my orders to Mary, Phil, Don, and Kenny Baker. And Kenny does exactly as I say. But if things were bad before, Bob, you have no idea of the situation now. Since they met you, you'd think I was a stooge or somebody.
Gosh, I didn't mean to start anything, Jack. Is there anything I can do?
Bob, when you kissed Mary, you did enough. Really, you did. Really, folks, you never saw such a smack.
Well, Jack, that kiss couldn't possibly affect Mary's feelings for you.
No, but last Monday was my birthday, and the kiss she gave me. What's good for frostbite, Bob? I got a warmer kiss from my high school principal when I graduated. I nearly killed that joke, too. Yeah, one good joke, and I have to kill it.
Yeah. Well, then you did go to school.
What's that, Bob?
You did go to school.
Oh, definitely. Why, back in Waukegan, they've got a halo around my dunce cap. But, Bob, I want to tell you the real reason for my being here tonight. Not that you need a reason on radio, you know, but I've been listening to this program for the last 14 or 15 weeks.
Oh, then you like our show.
Well, Bob, I will say that it's a nice program. You know, it's nice. But it... No, really, it needs a little something to... Well, it could be stronger.
Yeah, well, what do you mean it could be stronger?
Well, Bob, I don't mean that you have to send it to a gymnasium or anything like that. But I said before, it is a nice program.
Well, what do you mean, nice?
Now, don't pin me down. I mean it's pleasant.
Oh, yeah, you mean it doesn't go around and kick anybody in the face, huh?
Well, you don't have to get ironic. I didn't come here to tear your program down. I merely came to give you constructive criticism.
Yes, but, Jack, I hardly think this is quite the time or the place, you see.
Now, Bob, when I see a man drowning, I don't wait until he hollers for help.
Well, what would you suggest?
Well, Bob, look, let's analyze it. Now, since this show is an hour and mine is only a half hour, we must use twice as much showmanship, you see?
Showmanship? Well, have you got any ideas, Mr. Barnum?
Just call me Barney. Now, Bob, the only thing that fits here... You don't mind my helping.
No,
see,
no,
the only thing that fits here is a very hot, swingy song. Now, take a tip from me, Bob. Have Judy Garland sing a rip-snorting zazoo-zad number.
Yes. Is that what you would do?
Definitely, and I ought to know.
Yeah, well, that's fine. So now, ladies and gentlemen, Alan Jones, our brilliant young tenor, will sing My Heaven on Earth. Thanks, Jack.
Oh, it was nothing. It was nothing. Now, let's go.
Heaven is a million miles away. Still, I find it in my arms today. Heaven is the only word we'll do when I'm describing you. My heaven on earth started when you came into view. I never knew the thrill of living until you happened to be gone. My heaven on earth came with a glance, ringing romance. That lucky chance was all I needed to fill my heart with a song. Loving you isn't hard to explain. You're sweet, you're lovely and gay. Heaven's loss has been my greatest gain for letting an angel like you get away. My heaven on earth, you're in my arms, you're in my heart. So who can measure your worth? You're my heaven on earth.
My heaven on earth.
Ooh, heaven first came in view when I saw you.
I never knew
the thrill
of living
sweet day when I happened along.
My heaven on earth,
I saw you with one glance, knowing that you brought
that lucky chance
for man
to
and my greatest gain for letting an angel like you get away.
Well, Alan, thank you. Well, Jack, the folks seemed to go for Alan's song, didn't they?
Yeah, Judy Garland looks entirely different in pictures, doesn't she, Alan? Bob, I've met Jones before. He seems to be, seems like a very nice chap, an intellectual sort, ain't he?
Yeah. Yes, he sure is. You know, after meeting Kenny Baker last Sunday, I would say that Alan is the exact antithesis.
Well, what was that, Bob?
I say Alan is the exact antithesis.
Well, yes, yes, he is. If I knew what it meant, I could be even more definite. Of course, Bob, Kenny is a very amusing boy, though. He does say the most ridiculous things. I mean, when I talk to him, whenever I ask him anything, I get the silliest answers. You know, you've heard him. Like this morning, for instance.
Yeah, what'd you ask him?
To take a cut. He was polite, though. He said, go soak your head, please. Oh, he was awful.
Well, of course, Alan is a different type entirely.
Yes, I'd like to talk to him, just in case Kenny ever happens to read his contract, you know?
Yes, well, I want you to meet everybody, Jack. Alan.
Yes, Bob?
You know Jack Benny, don't you?
Well, I'm very glad to see you again, Alan.
Well, I won't work for a cent less than Kenny Baker.
Yeah. That Ann wasn't in the script. Biting the hand that might feed you, eh? I merely wanted to compliment you on your voice, Jones, although I don't think it was the proper selection.
What do you know about it?
Well, to put it conservatively, everything. You see, Alan, this show needs all the help that I can give it.
Now, wait a minute, Jack. Wait a minute. This show doesn't need anything.
Well, you're just being stubborn, that's all. Now, you take your musical selections. In the first place, I don't like the arrangements.
Well, what's the matter with them?
Now, you keep out of this, buddy. Who asked you to butt in, anyway?
Listen, Jack, this is Meredith Wilson, our conductor.
Oh. Now, look, Mr. Wilson, I sounded like Edward Horton then, didn't I? Oh. Now, look, Mr. Wilson, I was just telling Bob that the arrangements of your selection should have a little more schmaltz. You know, sounder construction in the bass and let the melody carry itself. You know?
Well, Mr. Benny, when I want your advice, I'll send for you. And I didn't send for you.
Well, a Phil Harris without curls.
Yeah? Well, you're a Clark Gable without hair.
Who said that?
I did. Don Wilson isn't here. Oh. Jack, this is Ted Pearson, our announcer.
Hello, Pearson. And that crack about my hair wasn't very funny. You know, I have plenty of hair. It just happens that I have a high forehead. That's all.
Ladies and gentlemen, speaking of Jack Benny's head, buy Maxwell House coffee in the super vacuum tin.
Well, this is a fine way to run a program, commercial plugs right in the middle.
You better beat it, Ted.
See, that Pearson has got some nerve for a guy with only one flavor. Well, Bob, anyway, now that I've got your show rolling along, an idea strikes me that right here, Meredith Wilson must play a sock number.
Well, is there any particular number you can suggest, Jack?
Well, I...
How about Rosalie?
No, not Rosalie. That number's so worn out. Let him play anything but Rosalie, Bob. See? Hey.
I trapped him, folks. That's the number I really wanted.
I've been wrong.
I think right here, I ought to play a violin solo.
Jack, go away.
Oh, all right. A little class wouldn't hurt this program.
Meredith, that was a grand job on Always and Always. It sounded swell.
Oh, really? I wasn't listening.
Say, Bob. Oh, there you are.
Frank, are you here again?
Am I here again? Why, yes, I think so. I'm sure I'm around someplace. I can hear my voice, can't you?
Yes, I guess you're here all right.
Well, that's fine. Then we won't bother looking for me. Let's get going, Bob. Now, we don't want to be late.
Late? Late for what?
The premiere. This is the most exciting opening night in Hollywood's history. Why, everybody who is anybody will be there. Believe me, I had to use plenty of influence to get you invited. And now you hesitate.
Where is this opening night? At Grauman's Chinese Theater?
No. At Tisha B'Av's Turkish Bath. It's a formal affair, you know. I'm wearing a top hat, white tie, and a black towel. Do it right, I always say.
No, thanks, Frank. I'm not going to the opening night of any Turkish band.
Oh, but Bob, I got two front row seats in the steam room. We'll have a hot time. And they tell me it's a very stylish place.
Yeah, what can be stylish about a Turkish bath?
Well, but in the ordinary Turkish bath, you have to take a shower before you go into the pool.
Yeah, well.
Well, but in this place, they make you take a shower before you take a shower. Very sanitary.
No, you better count me out, Frank, but you'd better go. You certainly look flabby.
Well, that's because I exercise. Oh, who looks flabby? Why, Bob, you can't be serious. You know I'm the perfect physical specimen. Why, only this morning I ran 100 yards in 8 seconds.
8 seconds?
Yes.
Well, it takes Jesse Owens 9 2/5 seconds to run 100 yards.
Yes, but I know a shortcut. Why, when I was in the Olympics in 1914...
Well, Frank, I didn't know that you were in the Olympics.
Well, neither did I until just now. Of course I was. Well, Bob, I was the sensation of the Olympics of 1918.
I thought it was in 1914.
My, time flies, doesn't it? Bob, I'm sorry you missed me in those Olympics of 1922. Let's see, they were held in the southern part of Europe.
Yugoslavia?
Yes, and I go skiing, too. Oh, Yugoslavia. That's the country. I thought you were clearing your throat. Yes, Bob, there's nothing like outdoor sports to keep you fit. Why, right here in California, I exercise every day, if it isn't raining. You should see me make a standing broad jump. And I'm a wizard at those old Grecian sports, throwing the javelin, pole vaulting.
What about the discus?
Oh, the discus. Well, I make my wife wash them. I wear the pants in my house with an apron over them.
Yes, Frank, I think America will acknowledge that you're definitely a manly type.
Oh, thank you, Bob.
Yes, you're one man who is the absolute personification of masculine charm.
Yes.
The epitome of dashing virility.
Oh, what do you hear? From the dictionary? You know, Bob, I didn't know that I was so good. I'm going right out and hire a press agent. So long. I'll see you next.
Yes.
Oh, Bob, who was that fellow?
That was Frank Morgan.
Morgan? What does he do?
What does he do? Well, I'll tell you what he does. He occupies the position of being radio's number one comedian.
Oh, you mean number one on this program?
Number one on this program or any radio program.
Oh, well. You mean not counting Sunday nights, of course.
Yes, counting Sunday nights or any nights. He's the funniest man in the country.
Well, that's open for discussion, you know.
No, that's closed.
Well, I've just opened it. And it's going to stay open if we have to run into Bing Crosby's program. Of course, you may think that Morgan is comical just out of sentiment.
Sentiment?
Yeah, you know the old saying. People on the same program are thicker than water. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't.
Well, whether you think he's funny or not, did you hear the people laughing?
Yes, they were laughing. They're happy. Things are getting better everywhere. That's why.
Now, I'll tell you why they were laughing. They were laughing because Frank Morgan is very funny. Do you get it? Frank Morgan is funny.
What?
I said Frank Morgan is funny.
Well, you're just in a rut, that's all. You probably think Jeanette McDonald has a better voice than Andy Devine. I've never heard of her. Get me out of this.
And now, friends, once more it's time for that friendly custom of ours on these programs. I mean, a visit to the old Maxwell House here on the lot for a steaming cup of Maxwell House coffee. And, Meredith, will we enjoy our coffee with the music that goes with it?
Now pause briefly for station identification.
KFI, Los Angeles.
This is Robert Taylor again, ladies and gentlemen, and we're continuing our good news of 1938.
Hello, Bob.
Well, Maureen O'Sullivan. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like you to meet the lovely lady who appeared opposite me in A Yank at Oxford. The picture we made in England last summer, Miss Maureen O'Sullivan.
Thank you.
Maureen, it's swell to see you again. Won't you sit down a minute and listen to the music?
Well, Bob, I understood, wasn't I to do a scene from A Yank at Oxford at this point?
Well, no, not right now. The drama comes a little later in the program.
Oh, that's strange. The gentleman in charge out there just told me to go right ahead now.
Gentleman in charge?
Yes. Mr. Burney.
Wait a minute.
Hey, Jack! Oh, just a minute, Bob. I'm straightening out Wilson's music. Now, Meredith, I think that if you made that a dotted eighth note, right in...
You think so?
Yeah, just lay it aside while I clear up this other matter. What is it, Bob?
Maureen O'Sullivan,
Terribly sorry. Miss O'Sullivan, meet Robert Taylor.
I know Mr. Taylor very well.
Oh.
Now, listen here, Jack. I don't mind your giving suggestions, but when you start sending people out on the stage in the middle of the program and confusing everybody, that's going too far.
I should say it is. You told me you were running this program, Mr. Burney.
The name is Benny. J-E-L-L-O. Now, look, Bob. My plan was to have Mavourneen here.
The name is Maureen.
Maureen, yeah. Maureen, come out and do a dramatic scene. You know, something to take the curse off of the first part of this show.
I think that's a good suggestion. I think that's a very good suggestion, Mr. Jello. After all, A Yank at Oxford is opening and the theaters all over the country in the next few days.
Well, I wasn't thinking of that, Miss Yank. Now, look, if you just...
Oh, all right, Benny, that's enough. I'm not going to stand here and have you tear our show down.
Now, Bob, don't get me wrong. I'm only trying to be helpful.
Helpful? You're ruining everything.
Mr. Benny, when do I do the scene?
I'll have it straightened out in just a minute. Now, look, Bob.
I won't look at anything. I started out with a good show tonight, and now where am I?
Well, don't get excited. I didn't say it was your fault that the show isn't good. Not entirely your fault. What do you think, Maureen?
Well, I don't know whose fault it is. When do I do the scene?
There isn't going to be any scene. Benny, you keep your nose out of this.
What, the whole thing? Look, Bob, if you didn't want me to tell you how to run the program, why did you send for me?
Who sent for you?
Well, of course, I didn't know they'd gone over your head. You know.
Who went over whose head?
Now, don't get acrobatic. You know how I happen to be here tonight, don't you?
No, I don't.
Do you two mind if I sit down?
No, not at all, not at all. Now, Bob, look, it was perfectly simple. I was walking along Hollywood Boulevard, minding my own business.
I can hardly believe that.
Well, I was walking along anyway. And who should I see a block or two away but the head of MGM's radio department, Louis K. Sidney?
Yeah, go on.
Of course, I had no intention of forcing myself onto your program, but after I caught up with Mr. Sidney, we passed the time of day. One thing led to another, and I saw where the conversation was going. So I came right out, and I said, L.K., I always call him that, L.K., would you like me on the Maxwell House program Thursday?
Oh, you said that, huh?
Well, what else could I say? I didn't want to embarrass him. Of course, he was tickled to death.
He was, huh? What did he say?
Well, he was very enthusiastic. He said, Jack, why don't you give me a ring in a few weeks and we'll talk about it.
Yeah, well?
Well, I forgot to call him, that's all. I had to come down. I couldn't let the fella down, you know.
Well, it's plain to see, Jack, you wished yourself on the program. And I know, because Mr. Sidney told me he didn't want you.
Oh, he did, eh? The big gossip.
Hey, you don't know what you're talking about, and I'm getting tired.
Well, why don't you do what millions of others are doing? Refresh yourself with a cup of Maxwell House.
Bob, do I understand that this gentleman has nothing to do with the show at all?
Absolutely nothing.
Well, he's been giving orders like a second lieutenant. He's had me waiting for 10 minutes, I'd say.
What's the idea, Benny? Keeping Maureen O'Sullivan out there cooling her heels.
O'Sullivan heels. That's a pip. Now, that's what you need on this program. Oh, that's dynamite.
That's not funny, Jack.
Bob, he's got Jack Conway standing around there, too.
Mr. Benny, how much longer do I have to wait?
Just a minute, Mr. Conway.
Jack Conway. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the man who directed us in MGM's new picture, A Yank at Oxford. Jack, Maureen, I'm terribly sorry if you've come here under a misapprehension.
Oh, I don't mind, Bob. As a matter of fact, this is probably the best chance I'll ever have to pay a tribute to a man I've admired for a long time. He's one of the nicest people and the best directors in all entertainment world. Take a bow, Jack.
Well, thanks, Maureen. I really...
Sit down, Benny. She means Jack Conway.
Well, you've got to admit it was a natural mistake. Two Jakes here. By the way, Mr. Conway, if I may make a suggestion, I don't want to butt in or anything, but if I had anything to do with directing that picture, I would certainly have gone to England for the locale.
What's the matter with you? We were aware in England for 3 months.
Well, then you should have made the picture while you were there.
We did.
Well, then I'm right, you see, Bob, how I'm helping your program. I don't know what you fellas want, anyway.
Well, I don't know what you want, Bob, but I'd like to have everybody know how proud I am of the Yank at Oxford. I think you, Maureen, and Lionel Barrymore gave wonderful performances. In fact, I'm proud and grateful to everyone in the cast, especially those fine English players who helped us so much. It's a pleasure to work with all of you. The Yank at Oxford is the first picture to come from MGM's new studio in England, and I'm happy that I was the director chosen to make it. Okay. Thank you.
Well, thanks, Jack. There's nothing I can add to that. Thanks for coming up here, and thank you, too, Maureen. Will you?
Oh, you're afraid you can't follow it, huh?
Play something, will you, Meredith? was Meredith Wilson and his orchestra playing Can't I. We now present a drama especially written for this program by Dory Sherry entitled Epilogue to Love. The girl is played by Maureen O'Sullivan. Curtain, please, Ted.
So much has been written about love that sometimes we make the mistake of regarding it as a commonplace thing. Yet every day, love still inspires men and women to do noble and ignoble things, and they are reborn or destroyed. Now, Epilogue to Love. The scene is a hallway leading to a large room. Two men are walking to the room.
When we get to a room, I'll leave you alone. It'll be easier for you to talk.
All right, John. I don't know what to say to her.
Oh, you'll find the words. You see, Jim, she's so terribly depressed that I've taken this chance to get you here. It might save her. She has years of life ahead of her, if she wants it.
Is she badly hurt?
She's blind, Jim.
Blind?
Yes. That's why she doesn't want to live. But you can help her. You loved each other once. After you left, I think she married me on the rebound. Never has really loved me like I love her. If you can bring her back, I'll do the rest.
I'll try, John.
I know you will. Here we are. Mary.
Yes, John?
You have a visit. It's Jim Thomas.
Jim.
Hello, Mary. I'll wait outside, Jim.
All right, fine.
Jim. Say that again. Say, hello, Mary.
Hello, Mary.
Jim, darling.
Yeah, you're as lovely as ever. Your hair is golden.
Jim, what awful thing took us apart?
Mary, let's talk of other things.
Yes. Other things, brighter things, perhaps, like... Oh, Jim, I can't see you. Do you know that? I can't see you.
Yes, I know. Let's not talk of that either.
When did you get back?
About 2 weeks ago.
I heard about you having been in that mine explosion. I was so frightened for you.
It was just a big scare. Two scratches and a lost hat.
I was such a fool, Jim. I should have gone with you anywhere you said.
Well, the part of the world I've been in is a man's world. Your life is here.
Life with no eyes. Oh, Jim, you don't know how terrible it is to be blind. To miss all the things that you take for granted. The early sun. The gray dust. The light and shadows on a wall of books. The glistening of a window pane after a morning rain. The blue...
Here, you mustn't. You need every bit of courage, every bit of sanity.
But you don't know. There you are, darling, looking at me, seeing the colors in the room. Perhaps the sun is streaming in. I can't see you or the sun. Nothing. It's a world of black.
Mary, dear, listen. Do find compensation. I believe that people do. All the nastiness, all the ugliness in life is away from you. You'll discover a part of your mind and soul that you never knew. You still can read, hear, smell, feel all the beauty in the world.
You say that, Jim, because you don't know. What beauty can there be with no light, no color?
There are many people there without sight who have found a beauty beyond the knowing of people who can see. A greater beauty of companionship. Beauty of self-sufficiency. And they can read and enjoy the same things with their fingers that they could with their eyes. They can hear and enjoy the same music. And over the air, they can hear the same things that make other people laugh and cry and thrill.
But the part of my life that was you is gone. Gone forever.
It was long ago. And it isn't much of a life running to the four corners of the globe. Even now, I'm planning to go away again, this time to the desert. Some more interesting bones to pick and place in the history of man.
What's going to become of John and me? He knows how I feel about you. Our love is a ghost that comes back to haunt him.
He adores you, Mary. He'll give you everything he can. You've got to live for him and for your son.
Oh, did you see my boy?
Yes, I met him downstairs. Fine-looking kid. Your hair and coloring, but his daddy's physique.
He's going to be a doctor, he says. This morning he told me he's going to study hard. And someday he's going to fix his mommy's eyes.
You'll get a lot from him, Mary. That's a love most people would envy.
Strange to think that someone could envy a blind person anything.
I'm sure they do. I knew a man once who saw his son fall off a cliff to a crushing, horrible kind of death.
He wanted to tear his eyes out. He'd have done anything to wipe that vision from his mind.
You always were a practical soul, Jim. You could convince me of anything. Even now, for the first time in months, I'm beginning to feel alive again. I even smell the flowers in the room. What kind are they?
Ugly-looking blossoms. You see, you're getting a beauty I can't enjoy. I can't enjoy the scent nearly as much as you do because I see what they really are.
Oh, they're probably gorgeous red roses.
They are not.
Oh, Jim.
Well, I'll have to be getting along now. I'll come back soon. But promise me, no more nonsense about yourself. You're going to get on. Get well. You've got to.
Jim, darling, once I thought you'd taken everything from me. But today, coming here, you've given it all back. I'm so grateful.
I'm going to remember you as you are right now. Your face full of new hope. The sun glistening on your hair. Please, Mary, keep that way.
I promise.
Goodbye, Mary.
Goodbye, Jim. That's odd, isn't it, Jim? We opened a chapter today with you so simply saying, "Hello, Mary." And now it's closed with a simple, "Goodbye, Mary."
I hope it's a new chapter for you. Goodbye, Mary.
God bless you, Jim. You've done it.
Tell me, was the sun streaming on her hair?
It was.
Good kiss. Remember your promise, John. She must never know that that explosion left me blind.
She never will, Jim.
My heart's acting strangely, it feels rather sore. At least it gives me that impression. My pulse has been madly without any cause. Believe me, I'm telling you truly. I'm giving it a pause. And my spirits are truly unmoving. Oh, I'm falling in love with someone girl. I'm falling in love with someone.
Alan Jones, who just sang Victor Herbert's Falling in Love with Someone. And now I want to take long enough to explain again just why it is when you make drip coffee, you need a special grind of coffee to fit that particular method of coffee making. Now, I'm going to do it by means of a little quiz. Now, when you make coffee by the percolator or boiled method, the water is in pretty constant contact with the coffee, isn't it?
Yes, in a percolator or coffee pot, the water is in contact with the coffee constantly. Not once, but many times.
Right.
so there's plenty of time for the water to extract all the flavor of the coffee. But now, when you use the drip method, with drip pot or glass coffee maker...
Well, when you make coffee correctly in a drip pot or glass coffee maker, the water passes through the coffee only once.
Right again. Do you realize what that means?
Well, I should say the coffee used in the drip method must therefore be ground finer, so that all the flavor and goodness of the coffee is extracted quickly.
Exactly. And for that reason, because we know that the same grind cannot be expected to give the best cup of coffee by coffee-making methods so different in principle, we offer Maxwell House in a separate grind that is always just right for each method. The regular grind Maxwell House for percolator or boiled coffee, the special drip grind for glass coffee maker or drip pot. Yes, that's one of the secrets of making better coffee every time. Buy the right grind of Maxwell House for your particular method of coffee making. Then you'll be sure to make coffee that's rich and mellow, full-bodied, unvarying in flavor, coffee that's always good to the last drop. And don't forget, you can now buy Maxwell House coffee everywhere, packed not only in the one-pound can, but in two-pound cans as well. You'll find increased convenience and added economy in buying the two-pound can.
Now, ladies and gentlemen...
Say, Bob.
Yes, what is it, Meredith?
You won't have to worry about Jack Benny anymore. I got rid of him, but good.
You did? But how?
Well, he wanted to meet Myrna Loy, so I sent him over to the little dressing room in the corner of stage 30.
But that's Fanny Bryce's dressing room.
You're telling me.
I saw you last night. And I'm in the mood, fellow.
Oh, Musette. Yes, Miss Bryce.
Tonight I'm expecting nobody. I'm strictly relaxing. One must rest the bones, ain't it? Quick, Musette, the door. Ask the name first. If it's a man, ask the name later.
Miss Loy. Oh, Myrna.
Well, blow me down and shiver my timbers if it ain't Jack Benny.
Well, either I'm in the wrong dressing room or Miss Loy has been seeing too much of Schlepperman. Pardon me, I thought this was Myrna Loy's dressing room.
But what she got that I ain't got?
Well, she...
Don't tell me. Won't you sit down, I hope?
Look, I'll be back later. I must see Myrna Loy before she gets away. I want her for my leading lady in my next picture. I imagine she'd be quite thrilled.
Why not? I saw you in your last picture, Artist and Model, and now you are Casanova. Vive la France!
Well, yeah, I thought I was at my best in that picture.
Was that your best?
Well, I might have sliced a little.
A little tight.
Well, look, yes, thank you. But look at Bob Taylor. Look. Bob Taylor gave me a couple of pointers last Sunday, which didn't hurt any.
Now you're talking my language. You know, Mr. Benny, it's a very peculiar thing, but you appeal to me. I've got here a scene for my next picture. Would you mind running over with me a few lines?
No, look, later. Not
all right, all right.
Well, I'll tell you what. Wait a minute. Or, after all, that's what I'm here for, to help everybody. Jack Pollyanna Benny.
Yeah.
Besides, the practice will do me good.
Wouldn't hurt me neither. Now, in this scene, you play the part of D'Artagnan, one of the three musketeers. You know, old Caron and three for five.
Well, I like that, I think. That'll be... What part do you play?
I am your sweetheart, a ravishing, beautiful queen of Italy.
You look more like Dolores del Schmutz.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're very comical.
Now, look...
You speak tender. Go on, Kitty.
Now look, Schlepp. Or Fanny, look. Look. D'Artagnan's queen was the queen of France.
France, Italy. What's the difference so long as she's a citizen? Go ahead, read the first line.
The first line?
Yeah.
Right from here. Just the way it's
right
written.
Huh? Yeah, not good.
I can't read backwards very well. I can't. Well, you know what Alan said once?
What?
Anything we make up will be funnier than this.
You're telling me.
All right. right from this line, huh?
Yeah, go on.
Ah, my queen. Ah, my queen. Come fly with me.
Come fly with you. I'm of royal blood, not pigeon.
Do not say that! Remember you loved me when I won the Battle of Orange.
Now you got five to go.
Five to go?
Yes.
Strawberry? Oh, yes. See, Don Wilson will love you for that.
You think so?
Yeah.
And now comes the big love scene. You crush me in your arms like a little pushy willow. And then, come on, take me in your arms. Mary Duff, it's okay.
Huh?
Mary's not looking.
Wait. Well, how?
How, yes. Look, first you put your arm around me, one arm, like this.
If Fred Allen is listening, I'll die.
Then you put the other arm around me like this.
Like this?
Mm, like that. Now you're holding me close. Closer. I can still breathe. Now look me in the eye.
Which one?
The good one. This is no time for technicality. Now you got your two arms around me.
Well, what do I do next?
Send for Phil Harris.
A fine thing. I'm going to look for Myrna Long.
And now we come to the MGM Concert Hall. Meredith, what have we for the concert hall tonight, or has Jack Benny canceled it altogether?
No, Bob, he decided to let it stand approximately as we had it. We're continuing with famous melodies that everyone knows and loves. And tonight's selection is Toselli's Serenade.
Forever true.
Ladies and gentlemen, next week we'll have another nice program, as Jack Benny calls it.
Yes, if you'll just follow my instructions.
Quiet, Jack. As I was saying, ladies and gentlemen, you'll hear Louise Reiner, Warren William, Melvin Douglas, Virginia Bruce, Connie Boswell, Douglas McPhail, plus the Good News regulars, Frank Morgan and Fanny Bryce. Your ticket of admission is just your loyalty to Maxwell House Coffee. So be sure you'll listen in again next Thursday. And in the meantime, go to the movies and enjoy yourself. Well, Jack, it was grand having you here. Really our privilege.
Well, I hope I've helped you.
Yes, I think it was smart of us to ignore you, don't you?
That was the last insult on the 16th program of the Good News of 1938 series. And I will be back on my own program next Sunday where I'm loved. Good night, Bob. Good night, folks. The last time I'll ever come over to help anybody, believe me.
Always and Always is from the Joan Crawford Spencer Tracy picture Mannequin. Thanks for the Memory is from the big broadcast of 1938. This is Ted Pearson saying good night and good luck for the makers of Maxwell House, the coffee that's always good to the last drop.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.